Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation Mount Conference 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is August 20th, 2014, or it's 8:25, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Till the Storm Passes By. In the dark of the midnight, ever halted my faith. For the storms howl above me, and there's no hiding place. Mid the crash of the thunder, precious God, hears my cry, keep me safe. Till the storm passes by, till the storm passes over, till the thunder sounds no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast and let me stand in the hollow of the hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. Many times Satan whispered, there's no use to try, for there's no end of sorrow, there's no hope by and by. But I know thou art with me, and tomorrow I'll rise where the storm never darkened the sky. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sound no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. When the long night has ended and the storms come no more, let me stand in that treasure on that bright, peaceful shore. In that land where the tempest never comes, Yahweh dwell with thee when the storm passes by. Till the storm passes over, till the thunder sound no more, till the clouds roll forever from the sky. Hold me fast, let me stand in the hollow of thy hand. Keep me safe till the storm passes by. The City of David, Part 9. We're going to continue now with a letter written by Alan DeLong. I guess the last one to Brother Johnson. Actually, he wrote it to the Gilead flock. He says, your final warning and urgent message to the flock of Gilead, Abib 8, or March 10, 2003. Okay. It says, change is a must. That's our subtitle. I saw that Elohim would raise up a Joshua that would lead us into the kingdom. There's danger of our being so overzealous to keep out of Babylon that we would commit our most noted blunder, that of the striking a stake and refusing to pull it up in advance. And when we cease to unlearn errors, we shall fall like those who have gone before us. We have learned much, and no doubt there is much more for us to learn. It is the follow-on and go-through spirit that will finally land the remnant without fault on the heavenly Mount Zion. And I'm going to put in parentheses, we know it's the earthly Mount Zion that we will finally be landed on, or the heavenly earthly Mount Zion. And that's Counselors to Writers and Editors, page 35, Ellen G. White. We know that this pulpit of Sister White applies to you, but in more ways than you realize. You told Brother Denton on the phone last week that if I accept your teachings, then I will have to renounce all that I have ever taught. And I just couldn't do that. Well, if that is your attitude, then you are committing a major blunder. That is striking a stake and refusing to pull it up and advance. All the prophets since 1833 have taught error. Not willingly, but ignorantly. We couldn't see the errors and the mistakes until the scroll unrolled. You were very keen in pointing this out. William Miller taught that the sanctuary was the earth in the 2300-day prophecy. Sister White taught that Yahshua entered the most holy place in 1844, that he has been there ever since. Brother Hollis taught that we would next keep the feast in the land. Now, if you refuse to unlearn error, you will fall just like those who have gone before you. For example, you have always taught me that we entered into the judgment for the living in 1970 with the bringing forth of the creation calendar. And you and Holliff both taught that the judgment for the living and the harvest are one and the same. Now you have been teaching this for 33 years. And yet I still don't see a harvest. No vanguard, no 144,000 first fruits, no 200 million Gentiles. No great multitude, nothing. For someone who is so big on the facts to prove Bible doctrine as you are, where are the facts to prove this doctrine? The fact is that all you have today is a schismatic, dwindling church, congregation that can barely get together and hold services on the holy day. The fact is the judgment for the living begins when there is a separation of wheat and tares, good fish and bad sheep and goats. That's when the harvest takes place. In fact, you started this at last year's Yahshua Supper when you said, folks, I have just gotten a message from the Lord. The Holy Spirit's going to do for you what you haven't been able to do for yourself for the last 32 years. He's going to bring you into unity. Then you proceeded to stretch forth your arm and bless those on your right side and then those on your left side, and not knowing that you were unwittingly fulfilling Matthew 25:31-34. That was when the judgment for the living actually began. You can change, you can unlearn error and learn new truth and new light. You've done it before. The only thing holding you back is your proud, arrogant spirit. Orders from heaven. Since you have been defrocked as a prophet of Elohim and no longer have inspiration, and since you cannot with any validity claim the title of prophet, priest, and king, and since you have stubbornly refused to obey the true voice of Yahweh, and since your antitypical 33.5 years of the life of Yahshua's ministry ended at the Feast of Tabernacles 2002, according to your own words, then you, Brother W. Johnson, are hereby given a decree from heaven to sign over all the assets of the Creation Calendar Research and Publishing Association and the 11th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Church in the Kermit, Texas, to the Kingdom of Elohim, the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Assembly Association and Organization. This includes the following. A. Power of Attorney and Authority to Denton Royce Brunken, a.k.a. Elijah. B. All rights to the name, Creation Calendar Research and Publishing Association, and Creation Calendar itself, and all published materials under that name. C. The church building located at 233 South Mulberry and all furnishings therein. D. The Gilead Health and Education Center building located at 111 North Pine and all furnishings therein. E. The print shop located at 446 North Oak, and the newest printing press, and the collator, and the living quarters, and all the materials and furnishings that go with the publishing department. F, all the money that was awarded you in your case at the will court. My home and property located at 200, the 206 North Main. My home and property located at 200 to 206 North Main and all the assets therein and all the furnishings therein. So Alan says, his home. Oh, yeah, he was living in Rose Johnson's house, I think, at that time, yeah. Or something. No, I don't know what it was, yeah. Yeah, Alan lived in Rose Johnson's little rent house there. Right behind Rose Johnson's property there on the other street for a while. Yeah, that's what it was. Okay. So anyway, he says, Alan continues on to tell Brother Johnson, if you are willing and obedient, Yahweh will let you dwell in your home at 450 North Oak. Otherwise, he may just put you out on the street just like he nearly did in the year 2000 when you let your reprobate son David, a.k.a. Absalom, have power and attorney over these very same assets, and he signed them over to the creditors to run a mobile home business that you had no business getting into in the first place. And if it hadn't been for Antipater, Elijah, Dett, and Brunken, whom you thrust out of the church using David Windmiller's renowned jurisdiction technology to stop the sheriff's order to sell your property, you would have been put out on the street. Not only did this technology do that, but it got you a $1 billion settlement in the World Court of The Hague in the Netherlands. And that money is now sitting in a bank in Switzerland, but you will never see a dime of it unless you obey this decree from heaven. When you are entrusted with the keys to the kingdom, it is of the paramount importance that you make wise decisions with the money, means, and assets that Yahweh places in your trust for the furtherance of the gospel message. However, you did not do this, but instead you squandered the means that were given you, and you went and laid your pound upon a napkin and became a wicked servant to fulfill the parable of Luke 19:12-27. And another came saying, Master, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin, for I fear thee. Because thou art an austere man, thou takest up if thou laidest not down, and reapest if thou didst not sow. And he said unto him, out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest that I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore then gavest not thou my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required mine own with usury? And he said unto them that stood by, take from him the pound, and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. And he said unto him, Master, he hath 10 pounds. For verily I say unto you that unto every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath shall be taken away from him. But those mine enemies, which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me, Luke 19:20-27. So Alan, he made a big point here not long ago about, I keep saying so much about obey those that have the rule over you. Well, he chastises me and say, well, make yourself worthy, in other words. Prove yourself worthy and maybe somebody will. In other words, Alan has never come under, he never come under anybody's authority, even out there at Kermit. He never come under brother's authority. He lived there and he carried on and worshiped with us, but Alan marched to his own drumbeat, he always had, about keeping the Sabbath and everything else. And I know he gets mad at me for hopping on to it, but you know what? Yahweh can't sanctify the house of David when he's got people marching to their own drumbeat that won't, that has no fear to disobey Yahweh and won't even keep his Sabbath day, make an attempt to keep it with the brethren. Right, that is, keep it right. So that's all I'm complaining about, that Yahweh is calling for me every day to come up higher and higher in my standards as a leader. Let us continue. Amy Lynn Belden Alan's ex-wife, because your obstinate rebellion to the commands of Yahweh and your refusal to obey the counsel of Matthew 18:15-18, which caused you to become a heathen and a publican, and because you would not obey Deuteronomy 24:1 and leave the house at 200 North Main, but instead sued me for divorce, and because you are now involved in an adulterous relationship that makes you defiled, you are hereby commanded by Yahweh Almighty to pack up your personal belongings in your car and leave Gilead Center, Kermit, Texas, because you no longer have a part to play in Elohim's kingdom, unless, of course, you repent and be converted and be reconciled unto your husband, and Yahweh heal your soul. Believe it or not, you and the rest of the congregation are being given one final offer to save your soul or be forever thrust out of Elohim's kingdom. Passover is a deadline of 2003. Okay, and I talked to Brother Johnson a few days before that Passover, 2003, invited him to come on. I gave him the final invitation, and he turned it down. Okay, it says, the final plea, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved, and for this cause Elohim shall send them strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in the unrighteousness. 2 Thessalonians 2:10-12. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they might have right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs, and sorcerers, and whoremongers, and murderers, and idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. Revelation 22:14-15. Because you wouldn't believe that the voice of Yahweh spoke to you on July 14, 2002 through his servant Elijah, and you did not obey the command to restore the day, but instead you defended your family and their wicked ways against the counsel of Yahweh, and because you continue to desecrate his sacred name, therefore Yahweh has removed your candlestick and sent you strong delusion that you should believe a lie, because your actions clearly prove that you no longer have a love for the truth, or of the truth, he says here. So therefore, the voice of Belial is now speaking unto you, and if you continue to believe this lie, thinking that it is the voice of Yahweh speaking unto you, then you will ultimately find yourselves outside the holy city. What is this lie? I'm going to be exalted and coronated to the king's throne at the Passover this year to fulfill the third phase of the divine call, commissions, and authority. How you have managed to fall this low to believe a falsehood such as that completely boggles our mind. The evidence presented in this document clearly proves that you are under the power of the deceiver to believe such a lie. You were once exalted unto heaven for the privilege. Now it looks as if you are being brought down to hell. The words of the prophet Ezekiel 13:1-10, quoted on page 1 of this document, are an exact description of what is taking place at Gilead Center. Thus Yahweh's plea to you is the same one Ezekiel gave you earlier. Turn ye from your evil ways, for why will you die, O house of Israel? This is a real good one here by Alan about the Sabbath. The very thing that I've been hollering at Alan all these years about him not observing the Sabbath right, and so now he's telling Rhodes W. Johnson about observing the Sabbath. Let's listen to it. He says, if thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy Yahweh honorable, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Yahweh, and I will cause thee right upon the high place of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob, thy father, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken. Isaiah 58:13-14. If you were still in the driver's seat and inspiration was still working with you, Brother Johnson, then you would be sending us letters of warning and condemnation and not the reverse. Yet in spite of all your transgressions and sins and your disobedience to the voice of Yahweh, you and your congregation are being given one final opportunity to repent and turn from your evil ways. Come now and let us reason together, saith Yahweh. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. Though they be red like crimson, they shall be like as wool. If you be willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. But if you refuse to rebel, you shall be devoured with the sword, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. Isaiah 1:18-20. Then all you have to do is just be willing and obedient, and you will make it to the land of Israel. But if you refuse to rebel, you will be devoured by the sword. What is this sword? For the word of Elohim is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of the soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart, Hebrews 4:12. The sword word of Elohim cuts clear to the bone and marrow. You have just witnessed the sword of Elohim in action by your reading of this letter. Obey the word of Elohim written in this document, and you shall live. Rebel and disobey, and you shall die. What are the instructions? Restore the daily, the divinely ordained system of worship. You quote this one 1,000 times, Brother Johnson. Restore the sacred name that has been used extensively in this document, and obey the voice of Yahweh and the instructions he gives to his servant and typical Elijah the Tishbite. That's it. It's really quite simple once you get sin and hatred out of your heart and you crucify your ego. For the five men of Ezekiel 9, with the slaughtering weapons in their hands, are now going through the city, the house of Elohim, and they start at the ancient men before the house. You, Brother Johnson, are the first one they visit because you are the ancient man with the most light. If you don't listen to the Elijah, you will be slain. Don't take any chances. You and your congregation are receiving a rare second chance to come into the movement that Yahweh brought forth last September. This is your final offer. Take it, do it, or die. Escape for thy life. Your servants in the Yahweh's name. He says, Alan DeLone and Denton Ross Brunken and Catherine Brunken. End of Alan's letter to Brother W. Johnson. Now let's go into a compilation that I did September 24th, 2002, entitled For the Antitypical Showdown on the Mount Carmel. And we'll start with page 1 of that article. And it says, For the antitypical showdown on the Mount Carmel is within the antitype and will take place at the Gilead Center on the Solemn Assembly on the last day of the Feast of the Tabernacles on the September 28, 2002 for the sanctification of the congregation. For the Solemn Assembly on the seventh day Sabbath is an high seventh day, for this is the antitypical year of the Yahweh's redeem. For the day of the vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeem is come. In all their affliction he was afflicted, and the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity he redeemed them, and he buried them and carried them all the days of old. Doubtless thou art our father, though Abraham be ignorant of us, and Israel acknowledge us not. Thou, O Yahweh, art our Father and our Redeemer, thy name is from everlasting. Isaiah 63:4-9-16. Prophecy must be fulfilled. Yahweh says, Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. Somebody is to come in the spirit and power of the Elijah. And when he appears, men may say, You are too earnest. You do not interpret the scriptures in the proper way. Let me tell you how to teach your message. Testimonies, Ministries, page 475. Okay, One Shepherd Rod, page 46. middle paragraph to page 47. Sister White does not mean to say that she is that prophet Elijah, but plainly says that a prophet must come, and it is said to be a prophet with the same spirit and power of Elijah. This prophet must come before Ezekiel 9 is fulfilled, for the prophecy of Ezekiel is similar to Elijah's experience with Israel in the days of Ahab. Now keep that in mind. We're dealing with an antithetical similar situation, and that similar situation developed at Kermit in 2002. For Elijah's work in the days of Ahab, king of Israel, was to prove to Israel that they had apostatized. And after doing so, he took the priests or prophets and cut their heads off and threw them in the brook. Such was the spirit and power of the Elijah. We read in Testimonies of Ministers 4:45. This seating of the victims of the Elohim, 144,000, Revelation 7, is the same that was shown to Ezekiel in vision. Then this seating of 144,000 is the same as Ezekiel 9, and the marking by the man with the writer's ink horn is the seal. As soon as the marking is done, the five men with the slaughter weapon go after him and slay both old and young, both maids and little children and women, and they begin at the ancient men before the house. It is at this time the 144,000 are marked or sealed. Ezekiel 9 fits Elijah's experience for this reason. The prophet or the message is called Elijah, with the spirit and power of the Elijah. The prophet Elijah had thought all Israel had apostatized, that he alone was left. But the Yahweh said he had 7,000 men that had not bowed and need to bail. Seven signifies a complete or perfect number, which stands as a symbol in this instance, meaning a complete number of thousands, a complete number of the very elect is 144,000. So we too, like Elijah, think the whole world is drifted into the world, bowed in need of Baal. Thus, Elijah stands as a type of the 144,000 living, translated saints. Okay, comment on Malachi 4:5. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. Luke 1:17. And he shall go before him in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the disobedient unto the wisdom of the just to make ready a people prepared for the Yahweh. John the Baptist represented the Elijah's message in his day, which prepared the way for the receiving of the Yahshua. John the Baptist's message denounced all idolatrous practices and condemned the religious leaders of that day. Elijah condemned Ahab and Jezebel as the leaders in Israel. Israel had gradually seeped into idolatry unto the point that Yahweh had to raise up a prophet to save Israel from the eternal ruin. Today we have Israel revisited. We have a very similar situation. We have a church of the Israel which has been exalted unto heaven in the point of privilege, but is in the danger of being brought down to hell. Israel, the true church today, has been honored with a prophet, priest, and king at its head, with probably no less than a dozen commissions to carry out, for the church has enjoyed inspiration in her midst for the last 33 plus years, but instead of being ready to receive her crowning glory, she is on the verge of being spewed out of his mouth and Ezekiel 9 being fulfilled upon her. At this point in the game, only the candid truth will prevail. One only needs to look at the record that has been made by this church to understand where the departure took place. Yahweh told Adam, when he drove the pair from the Garden of Eden, that his wife was in the transgression, that he was to rule over her. Yahweh had a reason for placing man ahead of the woman in the order of the chain of the command. Micah 7:5. Trust ye not in a friend, put ye not confidence in a guide, keep the doors of thy mouth from her that lieth in thy bosom. Esther 1:10-20. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Abista, Harbona, Bigta, and Abagata, Zethar, and Carcass, the seven chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus the king, to bring Vashti the queen before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princess her beauty, for she was fair to look on. But the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by his chamberlain. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. Then the king said unto the wise men, which knew the times, for so was the king's manner toward all that knew the law and judgment. And then next unto him was Karshina, Shittar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, and Marsina, and Memucan, the seven princes of Persia and Media, which saw the king's face and which sat the first in the kingdom. What shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to the law? Because she hath not performed the commandment of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlain. And Memucan answered before the king and the princes, Vashti the queen hath not done wrong, to the king only, but also unto all the princes and unto all the people that are in all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus. For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they shall despise their husbands in their eyes. When it shall be reported, the king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she came not. Likewise shall the ladies of Persia and Media say this day unto all the king's princes, which have heard of the deed of the queen. Thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath. If it please the king, let there go a royal commandment from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, that it be not altered, that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And when the king's decree which he shall make shall be published throughout all of his empire, for it is great, all the wives shall give their husbands honor, both to great and small. In the time of Jeroboam's death, Elijah's appearance before Ahab, the people of Israel suffered a steady spiritual decline, ruled by men who did not fear Yahweh and who encouraged strange forms of worship. The larger number of the people rapidly lost sight of their duty to serve the living Elohim and adopted many of the practices of the idolatry. Okay, that's page 109. Comment. Present tense. For the time of the Elijah's appearance is again at hand. First, you have to have someone in the church sign and crying for all the abominations done in the midst of it. That has been done by myself and my wife for the last several years. Standing before Ahab, Elijah demanded that all Israel be assembled to meet him and the prophets of Baal and Ashtoreth on Mount Carmel. Send, he commanded, and gather unto me all Israel unto Mount Carmel and the prophets of Baal, 450, and the prophets of the groves, 400, which eat at Jezebel's table. Prophets and Kings, page 143. For the command was issued by one who seemed to stand in the very presence of the Yahweh, and Ahab obeyed at once, as if the prophet were monarch and the king his subject. Swift messengers were sent throughout the kingdom with the summons to meet Elijah and the prophets of Baal and Ashtoreth. In every town and village, the people prepared to assemble at the appointed time. As they journeyed toward the place, the hearts of many were filled with a strange foreboding. Something unusual was about to happen, else why this summons together at Carmel? What new calamity was about to fall upon the people and the land? Prophets and Kings 143:2. facing King Ahab and the false prophets and surrounded by the assembled host of the Israel, Elijah stands as the only one who has appeared for the vindicating of the honor of the Yahweh, for he whom the whole kingdom has charged with his weight of woe is now before him, apparently defenseless in the presence of the monarch of Israel, the prophets of Baal, the men of war, and the surrounding thousands. But Elijah is not alone. Above and around him are the protecting hosts of heaven, angels that excel in strength, prophets in Kings 1:47. Ashamed and terrified, the prophet stands before the multitude, fully aware of his commission to execute the divine command. His countenance is lighted with an awful solemnity. In anxious expectancy, the people wait for him to speak, looking first upon the broken down altar of the Yahweh and then upon the multitude. For the Elijah cries out in the clear trumpet-like tones, "How long halt ye between two opinions? So Yahweh be Elohim, follow him, but if Baal, then follow him." Prophets in Kings 1:47. For the people answer him not a word, and not one in that vast assembly dare reveal loyalty unto the Yahweh. Like a dark cloud, deception and blindness had overspread Israel. Not all at once had this fatal apostasy closed about them, but gradually, as from time to time, they had failed to heed the words of the warning and reproof that the Yahweh sent them. Each departure from the right doing, each refusal to repent had deepened their guilt and driven them farther from heaven. And now, in this crisis, they persisted in refusing to take their stand for the Yahweh. Prophets in Kings 1:47. Remind the people of the long-continued apostasy that has awakened the wrath of the Yahweh. Elijah calls upon them to humble their hearts and turn to the Yahweh of their fathers, that the curse upon the land of Israel may be removed. Elijah prays simply and fervently, asking Elohim to show his superiority over Baal, that Israel may be led to turn to him. Prophets in Kings 1:52. Paragraph 1 and 2. For the Yahweh, Elohim of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel, the prophet pleads, "Let it be known this day that thou art Elohim in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Yahweh, hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Yahweh Elohim, and that thou hast turned their heart back again." Prophets in Kings 1:52-2. Duty to reprove sin have been shown that Yahweh here illustrates how he regards sin among those who profess to be his commandment-keeping people, those whom he has especially honored with the witnessing the remarkable exhibitions of his power, as did the ancient Israel, and who will even then venture to disregard his express directions, will be the subjects of his wrath. He would teach his people that disobedience and sin are exceedingly offensive to him and are not to be lightly regarded. He shows us that when his people are found in sin, they should at once take decided measures to put that sin from them, that his frown may not rest upon them all, that if the sins of the people are passed over by those in the responsible position, his frown will be upon them, and the people of the Elohim as a body will be held responsible for those sins. In his dealings with his people in the past, Yahweh shows the necessity of the purifying of the church from the wrong. One sinner may diffuse darkness that will exclude the light of Elohim from the entire congregation, and that's exactly what happened at Kermit. I mean, we had one evil person that was a son of Brother Johnson that wasn't even a member of the congregation, and never had joined and never intended to, and he'd come back and he'd be placed in a position as a member of the church, but yet he never made no declaration to tell everybody, well, I've got to make everything right with everybody I've wronged, because he wronged everybody in the church at one time or another. I mean, everybody he touched, he wronged them. And they all hated him. They all hated this, the David Johnson. But when he come back, Brother Johnson placed him at the head of the line, put him in with the top position next to him, and business as usual. So David was right there in the midst of us, and if nothing else, just him alone would cause Yahweh to defuse the light. And that would exclude the light, diffuse the darkness, that would exclude the light of the Elohim from the entire congregation. That's exactly what happened. So it says, when the people realize that darkness is sitting upon them and they do not know the cause, they should seek Yahweh earnestly in the great humility and self-abasement until the wrongs which grieve His Spirit are searched out and put away. Well, this is what happened to us in 2002. We finally just wound down to where there was no life noticeable at all in us, any spiritual life and the noticeable left in us. And then instead of Brother Johnson realizing that he finally got the answer from heaven through me, realizing that that was the answer to our dearth that was in the church and in the land, and that was the answer to a revival and reformation, was to acknowledge that message, and that would start a revival reformation. That would have launched Gilead Center out of the judgment of the dead into the judgment of the living, if he had acknowledged that message. That was a crossing over, that was a threshold. Okay, that would be the crossing over the abyss. And the song that I wrote, I've been down this valley below, oh, so long that I'm growing old, trying to cross that valley deep and wide. Anyway, I can see the hind cast away on the winding path. I'd like to stay until I reach the top over on the other side. That's where we were at. We were in that valley that was wide, that chasm deep and wide. That's what I call it, chasm deep and wide, the abyss. And all they had to do was accept the message and would have crossed over that chasm deep and wide. We'd have all done it together. There'd have been a new leadership. There'd have been a changing of the guard, just like I prophesied. But nevertheless, everybody could have been saved. Everybody would have had to just kind of circle around and taken a new position in the church. The leaders would have had to step down and take a lower position. Those with a lower position would have come up and taken the higher position. But they'd have had the new light, they'd have had that extra oil just shared with those that took the lower position. That's why they were not able to continue on as leaders, because they didn't tap into that extra oil that was being offered them through the unfolding of prophecy. Let us continue. For the prejudice which has arisen against us because we have reproved the wrongs that Elohim has shown me existed, and the cry that has been raised of the harshness and severity or unjust, Elohim bids us speak, and we will not be silent. If wrongs are apparent among His people, and if the servants of Elohim pass on indifferent to them, they virtually sustain and justify the sinner and are alike guilty, and will just as surely receive the displeasure of the Elohim, for they will be made responsible for the sins of the guilty. In the vision, I have been pointed to many instances where the displeasure of the Elohim has been incurred by a neglect on the part of His servant to deal with the wrongs and sins existing among them. Those who have excused these wrongs have been thought by the people to be very amiable and lovely in the disposition, simply because they shunned to discharge a plain scriptural duty. The task was not agreeable to their feelings, therefore they avoided it. 3T 265. For the spirit of hatred which has existed with some because the wrongs among Elohim's people have been reproved has brought blindness and a fearful deception upon their own soul, making it impossible for them to discriminate between right and wrong. They have put out their own spiritual eyesight. They may witness wrongs, but they do not feel as did the Joshua, and humble themselves because of the danger of the soul is felt by them. 3T 266. The true people of Elohim, who have the spirit of the work of the Yahweh and the salvation of their souls at heart, will ever view sin in its real sinful character. They will always be on the side of faithful and plain dealing with the sin, which easily beset the people of Elohim, especially in the closing work for the church in the sealing time of the 144,000 who are to stand without fault before the throne of the Yahweh. And this throne of the Yahweh is found there in Luke 1:32. I'm going to go read it to you. It says, "And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shalt call his name Yahshua. And he shall be great, and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Yahweh Elohim shall give unto him the throne of his father David. And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom there shall be no end." So what is this throne of Yahweh that I just read to you about? It says that it's the throne that Yahweh gave to his son. And that's the throne of David here on earth. So it says, when the 144,000 who are to stand without fault before the throne of Yahweh, that's the throne of David. And where's that throne of David sit up at? It's sit up here in Liberty Hill, Texas. Okay. So where they stand on Mount Sinai at? Liberty Hill, Texas. But I don't see anything in prophecy where it says when this throne is established, that is established first in Jerusalem. Because the time for the fulfillment for this to be established is now, and Jerusalem is on fire with warfare with all nations right now. But yet the prophecy called for this to be set up now. And matter of fact, it called for it to be set up starting in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. So that's the reason I say this everlasting kingdom of heaven is already begun with this grassroots right here in Texas. And when it is disclosed to view to the world one day, instead of their eyes being drawn toward Jerusalem, and then again, it may be that this kingdom will be transferred to Jerusalem at the time that the world is supposed to get their eyes open and see it for the first time. They may see it in Jerusalem for the first time. But the thing is, it'll start right here in Texas first. Okay, so it says, "Will they feel most deeply the wrongs of Elohim's professed people? This is forcibly set forth by the prophet's illustration of the last work under the figure of the men, each having a slaughter weapon in his hand. One man among them was clothed with linen, with a rider's ink on by his side. The Yahweh said unto him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that saw and that cry for all the abomination to be done in the midst of." 3T 266. Who are standing in the council of the Elohim at this time? Is it those who virtually excuse wrongs among the professed people of Elohim and who murmur in their hearts, if not openly, against those who would reprove sin? Is it those who take their stand against them and sympathize with those who commit wrong? No, indeed. Unless they repent and leave the work of Satan in the oppressing those who have the burden of the work in the holding up of the hands of the sinners in Zion, they will never receive the mark of the Elohim's seal of approval. They will fall in the general destruction of the wicked. Represented by the work of the five men bearing the slaughter weapons. Mark this point with care. Those who receive the pure mark of the truth wrought in them by the power of the Yahweh Spirit, represented by a mark by the man in linen, are those that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the church. Their love for the purity and the honor and glory of the Elohim is such And they have so clear a view of the exceeding sinfulness of sin that they are represented as being in agony, even sighing and crying. Read the 9th chapter of Ezekiel. 3:267. But the general slaughter of all those who do not thus see the wide contrast between sin and righteousness, and who do not feel as those who do stand in the council of Elohim and receive the mark, is described in the order unto the 5 men with the slaughter weapons. Go ye after him through the city and smite. Let not your eyes spare, neither have ye pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. 3:267. In the case of Achan's sin, Elohim said to Joshua, neither will I be with you any more, except you destroy the accursed from among you. How does this instance compare with the course pursued by those who will not raise their voice against sin and wrong, but whose sympathizers are ever found with those who trouble the camp of Israel with their sin? Said Yahweh to Joshua, thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you. He pronounced the punishment which would follow the transgression of his covenant. 3:267. So, I had Alan come to me one day, and he says, as long as those people are on this property, you will never get a blessing from Yahweh. Okay, and so I got rid of these people on this property, and still my blessing didn't seem to have really picked up any until I got rid of Alan. And now I've gotten rid of Alan. Seems like all heaven has opened up now with the direction we're headed for in the future. It's just something more than I can even I can contain within myself, the joy and the exhilaration that I feel having Yahweh help me to clean this camp with all of the accursed things that was among us, including Alan DeLong and Sharon. And that's a sad commentary. But I didn't pull no punches, Alan, down there in Kermit. I call it like it was down there, and I call it like it is right here. And that's the reason why I'm here doing what I'm doing. That's why you're where you're at doing what you're doing, because you have always been on the opposite side of the fences of this kingdom and the purpose that Yahweh has for this kingdom, to sit up here in the earth. You have always been on the what you call the counterbalance. Like Laura May used to tell brothers, well, I'm his counterbalance. Don't you know you got to have a team? You got to have one to counterbalance the other. That's what Laura May had always said. Well, that's what Alan has been, he thinks, the counterbalance here. Well, the counterbalance is finally broke off. Don't need no counterbalance, because I'll tell you one thing, Yahshua in heaven is my counterbalance. Okay. Joshua then began a diligent search to find out the guilty one. He took Israel by their tribes, then by their families, and next individually, and Achan was designated as the guilty one. But that the matter might be plain unto all Israel, that there should be no occasion given them to murmur and to say that the guiltless was made to suffer, Joshua used policy. He knew Achan was a transgressor and that he had concealed his sin and provoked Elohim against his people. Joshua discreetly induced Achan to make confession of his sin, that Elohim's honor and justice might be vindicated before Israel. And Joshua said unto Achan, my son, give, I pray thee, a glory unto the Yahweh of Israel, and make a confession unto him, and tell me now what thou hast done. Hide it not from me. That's in the Testimony, Volume 3, page 268. And Achan answered Joshua and said, indeed, I have sinned against the Yahweh Elohim of Israel. And thus have I done. When I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonian garment, and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of the 50 shekels weight, then I coveted them, and took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth, and in the midst of my tent, and the silver under it. So Joshua sent messengers, and they ran unto the tent, and behold, it was hid in his tent, and the silver under it. And they took them out of the midst of the tent, and brought them unto Joshua, and unto all the children of Israel, and laid them out before the Yahweh. And Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan the son of Zerah, and the silver, and the garment, and the wedge of gold, and his son, and his daughters, and his oxen, and his asses, and his sheep, and his tent, and all that he had. And they brought them unto the valley of Achor, and Joshua said, Why hast thou troubled us? The Yahweh shall trouble thee this day. And all Israel stoned him with stone, and burned them with fire, as they had stoned them with stone. 3T 268. Okay, the Yahweh told Joshua that Achan had not only taken the things which he had positively charged them not to take, lest they be accursed, but he had stolen and had also disassembled. The Yahweh said that Jericho and all its spoils should be consumed except the gold and silver, which were to be reserved for the treasury of the Yahweh. The silver for the victory of the taking of the Jericho was not obtained through the warfare or the exposure of the people. For the captain of the Yahweh's the Yahweh's host had led the armies of heaven. The battle was Yahweh's. The Lord's, it was he who, the battle was Yahweh's, okay. It was he who fought the battle. The children of Israel did not strike a blow. The victory and glory were the Yahweh's, and the spoils were his. He directed all to be consumed except the gold and silver, which he reserved for his treasury. Achan understood well the reserve made, and that the treasures of the gold and silver which he coveted were Yahweh's. He stole from the Yahweh's treasury for his own benefit. 3T 268. So, who are the Achans? Sister White says there's an Achan, almost an Achan in every family and in the church. Okay. Well, Alan, we identified Rodas and David Johnson as thieves of Yahweh's treasury down in Kermit. And Lame, all three of them, they were thieves. They betrayed their trust to guard the treasury and to use it for the right reason. And so likewise you, Alan, you fall into that category of stealing from Yahweh's treasury. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just so sorry for that situation. I have to report that type of situation. But that is a terrible, terrible trap to fall into, stealing from Yahweh. Okay, this brings a close of our study. This is our contact is at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on the audio archives. Hear this message and more. Let us close now with a song. Near to the heart of Yahweh, there is a place of quiet rest. Near to the heart of Yahweh. This brings the close of our study. This is our contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song entitled Near to the Heart of Yah. There is a place of quiet rest near to the heart of Yah. A place where sin cannot molest, near to the heart of Yah. O Yahshua, blessed Redeemer, sent from the heart of Yah. O us who wait before thee, near to the heart of Yah. There is a place of comfort sweet, near to the heart of Yah. A place where we our Savior meet, near to the heart of Yah. O Yahshua, blessed Redeemer, sent from the heart of Yah. O us who wait before thee, near to the heart of Yah. There is a place of full relief, near to the heart of Yah. A place where all is joy and peace, near to the heart of Yah. O Yahshua, blessed Redeemer, sent from the heart of Yah. O us who wait before thee, near to the heart of Yah.